Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
One pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez is toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
All right, it is Monday, March 11th. Welcome, everybody. This is Fantasy Baseball Today. And if you listen to our Friday show, we did an auction, and we just finished about 10 minutes ago. Or at least it sort of feels that way. Welcome to the show here on Fantasy Baseball Today. It is Adam, Scott, and Heath, and it's such a shame that Chris Towers isn't here today, guys, because I have a segment called Chris Messed Up. Should we do it anyway?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
It's easier to talk badly about him behind his back.
Oh, right? It's much more fun when he's actually here, Scott. It's much more fun. But I assume Chris, who's a little under the weather today, will be back tomorrow to defend his honor. So Chris Messed Up. Get excited for that segment in a little bit. Send us your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And tomorrow, you will find out how to get into the podcast league. Heath, are we going to be doing two podcast leagues this year?
Well, we'll do one podcast league and one league for the people.
Perfect. So, but they're for podcast listeners, so that's the podcast.
For the people.
For the people. Okay. Today, we're talking about
sleepers. Already getting stressed about that second one.
Don't worry, Scott. I'll take care of it. We're teammates. Just let me do all the work. That'll never happen. All right, so Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has an oblique strain. Clayton Kershaw is going to throw a bullpen session today. We got Adam Jones going to the Diamondbacks. And sleepers is our big topic today. And, of course, we'll finish up on the auction, tell you some interesting $1 players who were drafted in the reserve rounds, guys we haven't really had a chance to talk about, and also some takeaways from that draft. Let's start, though, with Heath Cummings' favorite sleeper for 2019. Then we'll get a few more later in the show. Go ahead, Heath.
It is Jake Bowers, and I was so pleased to see the other day on Twitter that Al Melchior is on board with the Jake Bowers hype, and he was actually wrote a piece talking about how he'd move Bowers down his rankings a little bit, but was still 50 spots higher than anyone else in the industry, and I'm in a similar spot. I really think there's some excellent potential with how hard he hit the ball when he hit it in the air. And I think there's one of two things that happens. Either he goes to Cleveland, which is a much better park for left-handed power hitters, and turns into a 25-30 homer guy. Or, and he's talked about this, possibly maybe not going for power quite so much. He's always been a really good contact guy in the minor leagues. It shouldn't be that surprising this year if he's actually a decent batting average guy. Most importantly, I expect him to hit in the middle of an Indians order that has a lot of really good hitters at the top, and not many people to challenge him for a spot in the lineup below him.
Who would you rather have in a roto league, Jake Bowers or Carlos Santana?
I'd still rather have Santana, and he's a really good value as well. But I think they're both good choices.
Okay, and Scott, you don't really feel the Jake Bowers love, right?
I mean, there's a lot more first basemen and a lot of first basemen and outfielders I like. And I'll give you one right now if you want.
Oh, is this your sleeper?
Yeah.
Okay. I was promised
one of them.
I was promised a sleeper that was kind of new, kind of different.
New. All right. This is new to our sleeper discussion.
All right, let's hear it.
I mean, for me anyway, we've talked about him before, but I find myself over and over again drafting Pete the Bat, Pete Alonso, rookie for the Mets, who has massive power potential that he's been showing off this spring pretty nicely. Some scouts give him an 80 power grade, which rarely comes along. And he's a guy who walked a lot in the minors last year, too. The Mets have said, their GM has said even before spring started, that he wanted him to be the Mets opening day first baseman. I'm still skeptical they're going to let him, rather than give him the 2 weeks he needs in the minors to then get called up and buy an extra year of team control that way. But it's not a long wait either way. And, you know, not any longer than Eloy Jimenez I guess Vladimir Guerrero is dealing with an injury now. But either way, it's going to be a little wait for all of those guys, not any longer for Pete Alonso. And yet he goes very, very late. Nobody seems to be investing that much in him. I love getting him as my utility option or my corner infield option in a roto league. I think he could put up Reese Hoskins type numbers potentially this year. Pete the Bat, I'm all in. Pete Alonso.
So, Heath, would you rather have Pete Alonso or Jake Bowers?
I'll still take Jake Bowers. I do think one other thing that we didn't talk about with Bowers that he'll provide that Pete Alonso is not going to is I expect that Bowers is probably going to steal 10 to 12 bases.
Okay, there you go. You have some first base options. It's not the deepest of positions, so Jake Bowers and Pete Alonso, you can get them late. And those are a couple of sleepers. We're going to have a lot more for you later on in the show. Who's ready for Chris Messed Up?
Yes.
All right. Like, I really wanted him to be on, but Chris, I know you're listening, so I'm just going to tell you that you drafted Luke Voit, or you got him in the auction. You should have drafted Greg Bird. Okay? You messed up. He should have. This is a 30-man rosters. I took Greg Bird with the last pick in the draft. 12 teams, 30-man rosters. That is 360
You're saying he should have hedged his bet and gotten
yes,
both. That's
he should have gotten both.
Okay, I thought you were saying it's already Birds.
No,
so
he should
have drafted Voit at all.
I'm glad we're having
this conversation because now I don't have to touch on Voit as my sleeper. I mean, Aaron Boone made it clear the other day, both Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman, that there's only room for one of these first basemen. So whoever wins the job is the first baseman. There's no threat of a platoon here, which is what I was most concerned about. Bird being left-handed hitter, Voit being the right-handed hitter. Not going to happen. It's either or. And I also kind of feel like that favors Voit, right? Can you imagine them sending him down?
No, it's hard.
After the way he finished last season? I mean, I guess it's possible, but it would be shocking to me.
Yeah, and they're both having good springs. I just think that it's not a bad idea. Sometimes it's a good idea to take two closers if they're both battling it out. Like if you want to draft Pedro Strop and Brandon Morrow, if you want to draft two Diamondbacks closers or, you know, closer options, the White Sox with Herrera and Colome, you know, it's not necessarily a bad idea to use two roster spots if they're late enough on one player. And Voit, you can't get all that late. But Bird, obviously, I mean, I got him 360th. Nobody wants him. It's not a bad fallback option just in case Luke Voit, who's going 201st overall, does not win the job. Scott, Luke Voit, Jake Bowers, Pete Alonso, rank them.
I go Alonso, then Voit, then Bowers. For me, pretty significantly behind.
Heath?
But yeah, I'd look.
Yeah, I'll go Bowers, then Alonso, then Voit.
All right. A couple things to promote for you. We got the commissioner product for all you serious fantasy players, cbssports.com/FBT. You're going to love it. Great stuff. I talked about the league history. That's a great feature. Made me actually feel good about what I've done in the auction league that we've been doing for years. And Sportsline. Okay, I tweeted about the Who Do I Keep tool. So Chris Towers, I believe this is a Chris Towers jam. It's really cool. You can plug in, you know, player X in round 8 versus player Y in round 4. And we have a tool that will help you figure out the best value, who to keep. But there's so many great things, including the Aces story that we've talked about on Sportsline. And if you want to try it for just $1 for your first month and then $9.99 after that, go to sportsline.com and sign up with the promo code Vegas. Promo code is Vegas. Scott, have you ever been to Las Vegas?
I have not.
It's very fun.
Okay.
Heath, tell him what he's missing.
No.
What's that?
Tell him what he's missing.
To think of things that Scott's missing that Scott would enjoy.
Vegas, and I don't do a lot of
times
things that Scott doesn't do. Go ahead. Sorry.
I have been 4 times, and I don't know that any of those trips involved things that Scott would want to participate in.
Well, yeah. Then I'll tell Scott. There's great food. There's theater. Uh-huh. There's gambling. You're going to have to gamble.
Why are you guys trying to sell me on Vegas?
I just think you should go. You should go. All right.
Okay. Maybe someday.
News and notes. Let's talk about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's out at least 3 weeks with an oblique strain. And he's been working on his conditioning this season. He's not the trimmest guy in the world. Heath, what do you make of this Vladimir Guerrero Jr. injury?
It's not good. Now, I didn't have him ranked as like a top 50 player overall, and so I don't feel quite as nervous about it. I've got him at 63. I don't think I'm going to drop him down yet. I expected that he was not going to be up on opening day. I wasn't 100% sure that he was just going to show up magically 5 days after the season started to make sure his service time was right. And the way they've talked about him this spring, it's been, for the most part, insulting. He's probably their best baseball player. But now that he's got this issue, one that we know does linger for hitters sometimes, it's really more of an excuse for the Blue Jays to take things slow with him. I think there's a chance that we don't see him until May now, which would be really bad.
So how far should he drop in overall rankings? He's a fourth round pick, you know, in the 40s. ADP is currently 48. Yeah, sometimes he might slip.
I think that was
round.
Too high in the first place for me, but I still think because of his upside, and he could, like, he's one of the guys that we could be talking about next year that's just all of a sudden a first round pick because of how good he was in two thirds or three fourths of a season this year. I still think if he's there in the sixth or seventh, you got to think really hard about it.
Yeah, I'm thinking sixth round too. And it probably does change his timetable slightly because they probably will want to make sure he's really swinging the bat normally before he comes up. So I'm kind of thinking May 1st too. It can still be middle of April, but I mean, the timetable works that it could still be middle of April like we were expecting all along. But I'll give him a couple more weeks, say May 1st.
So would you take Matt Carpenter or Vladimir Guerrero?
Carpenter.
I would probably take Carpenter in points, but I think I'd still take Guerrero and Roto.
And last point about Guerrero, wouldn't he be better in points leagues? Because his plate discipline is so good?
Or
it should be, anyway.
It depends. Is he going to hit 330?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to be very format specific, to be honest. It's more a case of Carpenter with that comparison. Carpenter obviously excelling in points leagues.
Clayton Kershaw will throw a bullpen session today. He could be ready for the start of the season. Anybody buying that? I'm not.
Not really. No, I'm not.
I wouldn't
Certainly
say
not I'm, opening day.
I wouldn't say I'm buying it, but it does bring up the point. And I've avoided Kershaw recently. I have him on one or two teams that we drafted a few weeks ago. I do think it brings up a point that the way he's falling in drafts right now, he could be one of the best draft day values if he happens to stay healthy.
Right. It's just like, okay, even if he recovers from this, gets back an opening day or misses one turn through the rotation, it's just a reminder of the risk that you're taking with Clayton Kershaw. But
the risk is largely being priced in now.
Oh, yeah, I'd say so. So who should go first, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Clayton Kershaw?
Kershaw.
I would say
Kershaw.
Kershaw for sure in a points league. In Roto, it's really close.
All right, more notes. Ryan Brazier, Boston relief pitcher. He's making progress. He's recovering from a toe infection, but he has not pitched in a spring training game yet, which would seem to indicate that Matt Barnes is the favorite, and Scott got Barnes for $1 in our auction league. He might have gotten the Red Sox closer for $1. I took Brazier in the reserve rounds. Now, that's an example, Scott. If Brazier had been there, I took him we had seven reserve rounds after we auctioned off 23 players per team. Would you have taken Ryan Brazier if the opportunity had been there?
And hedged my bet?
Yeah.
I really think he's the stated favorite even before this toad thing came up. So I don't have much doubt it's going to be him. So I probably wouldn't have.
I just want, has Barnes had a little bit of an injury issue as well? Because he's only made one appearance this spring and absolutely got lit up.
Yeah. I don't know. They might be slow playing him. I haven't heard anything about an injury, but I think he has the potential to be really good as a closer. His 14.0 K per nine were sixth among all relievers last year. ERA, FIP, XFIP, Sierra all suggest that 3.65 ERA he had was on the high side, and that should be closer to like 270. So, obviously the Red Sox team that you would think would provide ample save opportunities. So Barnes, this is great. I was having trouble narrowing down the four sleepers I was going to talk about it. We cross off Voit. We cross off Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes, one of my favorite late rounders to target for saves because he's going to be so good with the strikeouts too. So now I am down to four.
All right. Good. And I just think that it does make sense to also take Brazier if you're not giving up much. I mean, if you're doing a 30-round draft, you could get Brazier round 25 or later or something like that, and I just don't know that there's a harm in that, but Barnes should go first. And, Barnes is a little scary, four and a half walks per nine, but It's not so uncommon for closers. But here's my bold prediction, and you shouldn't draft on this. I'm just going to say it so when it actually happens, everybody says, oh, A's are a great call. Felipe Vasquez will be the Red Sox closer after the All-Star break. they will make a trade at some point. Let's see. Adam Jones, 1 year, $3 million deal. He had a pretty bad year last year, but his home run to fly ball rate was basically cut in half. If it had been normal, probably would have had a normal Adam Jones year, which is fine. Is he an everyday player, Scott? And should Adam Jones be drafted in mixed leagues?
He shouldn't be drafted in mixed leagues. There seems to be a question as to how much he's going to play. They had Ketel Marte ready to take over as the team's regular center field. He's flanked, of course, by David Peralta, who's not going anywhere, and Steven Souza, who has injury issues, has consistency issues. I think it could come to pass that that Souza just falls out of the lineup, that maybe Marte goes back to the infield. But obviously, I don't think either of those is going to be the plan from the start. But we'll wait to hear more.
Okay.
Jones, I think, is a better bet for deeper leagues.
Well, and the thing about their position with Marte, and he can play three different positions. They've talked about wanting him to play three different positions. I mean, right now they've got Wilmer Flores slated as their starting second baseman and Nick Ahmed slated as their starting shortstop. There's a lot of opportunities for guys to get plate appearances. There's very few guys that have to be in the lineup every day.
But does it hurt Ketel Marte? Does it make him less than an everyday player?
I don't think Ketel Marte is going to be the guy that plays less.
Okay.
I think he's going to play as much as he can, and where he plays, we don't know yet.
Heath, Jose Altuve will not return until at least this weekend due to side soreness. So not.
I'm
quite
glad that I didn't get him in our auction.
I did. Man.
I'm not worried. I'm not worried about him yet. If it bleeds into next week, then maybe I start getting concerned. But right now, I'm fine.
Scott, the Braves are going to use two closers. What's your take on the Braves bullpen?
That's kind of the way I saw it playing out. Going matchups with the lefty AJ Minter, the righty Aroldis Vizcaino. It's not totally clear whether Vizcaino is healthy. So, I mean, obviously, if it's a true split lefty-righty, it would favor Vizcaino. He would get the majority of the saves there. But I have a feeling it's going to be close to a 50-50 split, or maybe Minter overtaking Vizcaino sooner than later, depending on health. And, you know, once that happens, he might just keep the job. But there's always a chance the Braves go sign Craig Kimbrell, and this becomes a moot point.
There you go. Heath, Jorge Alfaro has knee inflammation. Have you dropped him in your rankings at all?
I've not yet, but I probably have to consider if it drags on for another week. He is one of those guys that the floor is extremely low for Alfaro, but once you get past those top 12 or 13 catchers, you're just looking for somebody that has the upside to possibly be good. I still think as hard as he hits the baseball, he has that upside, but it won't matter if he can't get on the field.
Tyler Skaggs, already the injuries begin. He was scratched with arm fatigue. They really are downplaying it. An MRI was negative. He said he was messing around with a new pitch in the bullpen, and his arm got tired. So I'm just going to take Tyler Skaggs at his word. He seems like an honest guy.
Are you still going to Tyler Skaggs?
I am going to Tyler Skaggs. Okay. Yes, hopefully this is no big deal. Kyle Seager, on the other hand, we are awaiting MRI results on his wrist, which he hurt over the weekend. The Royals signed Martin Maldonado to a one-year, $2.5 million deal. Is Maldonado the starting catcher for the Royals?
Yes.
And we don't really care.
Probably not.
I was hoping they signed Evan Gattis to be their catcher. They love the former Braves. Yeah,
I think he's a borderline number two catcher.
Okay. Blake Snell not happy about his small pay raise. I don't blame him. Jimmy Nelson's going to make his spring training debut today, and Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez are engaged. That's great news. They should go to Vegas.
Jose Canseco is not happy about it.
He's not?
He was tweeting about that.
What?
Not happy at all. He actually tweeted his phone number last night asking J-Lo to call him because he had some stories he wanted to share with her.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Jeez, he's like...
Did you call the phone number?
An anarchist.
I did not call the phone number.
Maybe we should. Maybe we could get our studio to call him and like Skype him in. We could get an interview.
That would be fantastic. I think it would be probably a very good podcast.
All right. We got some sleepers from Scott and from Heath. We have helped Scott eliminate the ones he thought he might want to talk about. So he's excited to give you three or four more sleepers. Heath will do the same. We will come right back after this.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.
All right, Scott, let's get your sleepers. Give me a few. So you gave us Pete Alonso earlier in the show. Who else do you want to talk about today?
Mm-hmm. We also talked about Luke Boyd, Matt Barnes. A guy I'm drafting a lot, and we have talked about him quite a bit, is Franmil Reyes, who I believe is the most talented outfielder in terms of bat skills that the Padres have, and that's including Will Myers. Obviously not as proven as Myers, but I think he could be better. If you look at what he did after coming back from the minors last year, I mean, the numbers at their face are impressive enough, but he was pretty awful and on his initial call-up, and then got significantly better after the return. From that point forward, that was like at the start of August, he hit .318 with 10 home runs and a .933 OPS. His strikeout rate was way down. It was like 20%, which is closer to what it was in the minors, and not high at all for a power hitter, actually very low for a power hitter. He hits the ball to all fields with pretty much evenly, so he's not going to be a guy who's vulnerable to shifts or anything like that. And his average exit velocity was, I think it was top 15. It wasn't far behind like a Giancarlo Stanton. He hits the ball really hard. He hits it everywhere, and he hits it consistently. So you're talking about a guy who could certainly hit for power. I mean, you just doubled last year's home run total. You're talking a 32 homer season. That's how many he hit between the majors and minors last year. And he could probably hit for average too, looking at the rest of the profile there. I'm very excited about him. I'm not sure he's going to be an everyday player right away. So that's why it's a little harder to draft him in like a head-to-head points league with the three outfielder leagues, but certainly five outfielder leagues. I love taking him as my fourth or fifth guy. And, I think when he eventually does claim an everyday role, you'll be excited to have him in any format.
That's Franmil Reyes going 288th overall. Some of the outfielders going ahead of him are Randall Grichuk, Domingo Santana, Shin-Soo Choo, Max Kepler. Would you take him ahead of all those guys?
I mean, I kind of like Kepler, but some of the names you were mentioning, yuck. Yeah, I would take him. Oh, so Choo, Kepler, who else did you say?
I said Domingo Santana and Randall Grichuk.
Yep, take him over all of them.
Yeah, nope.
All right, let's do a Heath sleeper now. Heath, go ahead.
Well, let's talk about Domingo Santana. Why don't we? He is a guy who is going to have an everyday job, hits the ball extremely hard, has shown the ability to steal bases in the past. I mean, he's available after pick 200, and he has a 30-15 season already on his resume. He's been crushing the ball so far in spring training. I expect him to hit pretty close to the middle of the order, because the Mariners don't have a very deep order, but I don't think it's because the Mariners don't have any talent in their lineup. They're still going to have decent hitters in front of him. This is a guy who could be looking at a 3,100 season. It doesn't hurt you in batting average. He's kind of what we hope Franmil Reyes might be able to be, minus the steals.
Well, it's also, we're hoping that Domingo Santana can be that, because he obviously struggled last year, but he was number 22.
Playing time was a concern last year, yeah.
Yeah, he only played 85 games. He was sent to AAA. But in 2017, Domingo Santana was 22nd in points, 16th in roto, and as he'd said, 30 home runs, 15 steals, and 29 doubles as well. All right, so Heath would take Santana over Reyes. Scott would take Reyes over Santana. They don't necessarily agree on those two. Although I know that Scott isn't really loving Domingo Santana, but Heath, how do you feel about Framil Reyes?
I don't necessarily disagree with anything Scott said about Framil Reyes. I mean, obviously the full season statistics are more predictive than what he did after he came back, but it was encouraging. My bigger problem is I don't really see how they can play Will Myers in center field every day. I don't think they're taking Hunter Renfro out of right field. That's where I expect him to play. And so I do think it's going to be difficult for Reyes to get regular play time. You know the word I'm trying to say.
I don't know when you're talking about a guy breaking into the big leagues that full season numbers are more predictive. Like maybe full season majors and minors combined, but like, you know, he obviously was overwhelmed, I think, that first stint up, which is why he got sent back down. I mean, you got to give a guy a chance to develop before you start digging into the numbers like that.
All right, Heath, give
me another
sleeper.
Obviously really hot at the end, but I don't think that's necessarily what we should expect either.
Oh, no.
Closer to his minor league numbers in that first inning.
Yeah, no. We shouldn't expect him to do what he did. The last 31 games, he had a 978 OPS and a 395 BABIP. We're not expecting that from Reyes. Heath, give me another sleeper.
I'll go with Luke Weaver, who we've talked about quite a bit on this podcast. I think he has a good chance to be a change of pace guy. He has. He's been one of those pitchers that really has kind of bought into the technology. I think he went and bought his own Rapsodo machine, which is something that kind of helps you see the details of your pitches a little more clearly than you can see with a naked eye or even on video. And he has really apparently improved his curveball. I'm expecting Luke Weaver to be a solid number three or number four starter this year, and he is free on draft day.
All right, I am going to look up how much it costs to buy a Rapsodo machine. And Scott, give me another sleeper while I try to do this.
Yes, I am going to give you Marco Gonzalez, who is my favorite late round pitcher to target. When I'm drafting with Chris Towers, I rarely get him because I think he and I are in the same boat here, but pretty much always get him when I'm not drafting with Chris Towers. And really, it's you're not going to find that lack of downside in the late rounds. He is well equipped for run prevention. Two of the three legs of the FIP triangle he actually dominates on. It's kind of like Miles Michaelis that way. He had the ninth lowest fly ball rate of any qualifying pitcher last year, the fifth lowest walk rate, and he struck out more, like a batter per nine inning more than Miles Michaelis last year. But really, you know, just the fact that he's a control artist and a ground ball specialist. If he hadn't tried pitching through a neck injury in August, eventually succumbed to the DL, but he had a few starts where he was trying to pitch through it. Entering August, he had a 3.37 ERA. Spends time on the DL, comes back in September, has a 1.71 ERA in four starts. So you're talking about a low threes ERA if you take out that stretch where he tried to pitch through injury and ended up with a 4 ERA on the season. So that kind of shows you the extent, how good he is at preventing runs. And he's their opening day starter. So
he is.
They're going to ride him pretty hard this year.
Who do you guys like better? Heath sleeper, Luke Weaver, or Scott's sleeper? And not to say that Heath and Scott don't like Luke Weaver, Marco Gonzalez, but just the guys that they threw out. Scott threw out Marco Gonzalez. Heath threw out Luke Weaver. Who do you like better?
Me?
Doesn't matter.
Gonzalez.
Weaver.
I figured as much. Okay, so should I get the...
I thought that was one of those, like, listeners that answer along at home. Who do you like more?
Should I get the $200 travel case for the Rapsodo machine?
Well, I think you want to. I mean, you're not, like, are you only going to use this at home? You're going to need to go to the park and use it in places. You don't want to spend $4,000 on a machine and then have it break down on you.
How'd you know how much it costs? And then there's the upgrade kit. I'm going to get the upgrade kit and the year subscription. So that's 700, 1,550. So we're talking about $5,600 without taxes for the Rapsodo machine. That's quite a commitment from Luke Weaver. Good for him. Scott, give me another sleeper.
Danny Jansen, the Blue Jays' expected starting catcher. It became pretty clear he was going to be the main guy back there after they traded Russell Martin to the Dodgers. And he has a very interesting batted ball profile, one that it's hard to imagine him failing, really, based on the standard for comparison there at catcher. Makes a lot of contact, like a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio in the minors. Has some power, enough that you expect him probably to hit between 15 to 20 homers, maybe even a little more, given the current offensive environment in the majors. Depends how many bats he gets, of course, but I think he'll get a lot. And he lengthens what seems like a very small window for you to grab a catcher who's going to make a difference for you in fantasy, even in a one catcher league. There's so few of them. It's one fewer now that Salvador Perez is out for the season, having Tommy John surgery. Danny Jansen tends to drop a couple rounds behind the last of that group, and includes Yadier Molina, Buster Posey. Those are probably the stragglers from that group. So Danny Jansen's somebody I end up with a lot because I'm just not ready to pay the premium at the position. I have other priorities at that point in the draft. End up with Danny Jansen as my starting catcher, and I think he's going to be a real difference maker there.
All right, Danny Jansen, he's eighth for Scott. He's seventh for Heath. Heath has Jansen ahead of Yadier Molina, and Scott does not. But, yeah, he was a top nine catcher, and then Salvador Perez out for the year with Tommy John. So now Jansen is a top eight catcher with very limited major league track record. It just goes to show you what this position is like. I mean, top 12, we're talking Wellington Castillo for Scott, Jorge Alfaro for Heath. Heath, give me another sleeper, please.
I'm going to do the thing that I always criticize and talk about splits within season, because Reynaldo Lopez had a weird, weird, weird year last year. There was a big portion of the year where he was not very good, but he had some very good batted ball luck and kept his ERA below 4 and kept pitching deep into games. But then late in the year, his last 7 starts, he went 7 innings in 4 of them, at least 6 innings in 6 of them. He had a 1.38 ERA, actually struck out more than a batter per inning, and his FIP was below 3 as well. And so at the beginning of this year in spring training, he hasn't been very good so far, but he is still striking out a lot of guys. Lopez is a guy with good pedigree. Looked like he started to figure some things out in the second half of last year. And again, like Luke Weaver, pretty much free on draft day.
Okay, so to recap, Scott told you Pete Alonso, Framil Reyes, Marco Gonzalez, and Danny Jansen as sleepers. He had Jake Bowers, Domingo Santana, Luke Weaver, and Reynaldo Lopez as his sleepers. And those are just 8. There are a lot more. Please go to the website, cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball, cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball, and get a whole list of sleepers.
Yep.
Yeah.
2.0 is up for me. Version 2.0 is up for me. Heath, I think, is writing his version 2.0 this year.
This week.
I hope you're
also
writing
this
year.
Yeah. Yes. Other names you'll read about include Nick Senzel and Brad Peacock. So I'm really, so here's my thing about Brad Peacock. I gave the stats on Friday's show. He was so good as a starter in 2017, pitched exclusively as a reliever in 2018, but at the later stages of 2017, Peacock really cut down on the walks, which had plagued him for basically his entire career. And then as a reliever last year, he was under 3 walks per 9. Very, very good. Very encouraging stuff. What I don't understand is why it was even like, why wasn't it just obvious to put him in the rotation? You know, the Astros may know something we don't know, but based on how good he was in 2017, how good he was as a reliever last year, the improvement in control, it should have been a layup for him to be the fifth starter. Like, they didn't need to go out and sign Wade Miley. They had enough guys.
Well,
yeah.
I think the concern is, and it was evident even when he was really good in 2017, he was just barely more than 5 innings per start. They have a lot of young guys that we expect to move into the rotation at some point this year. And so I don't think they see him as a long-term answer as starter. He's more of a guy that's going to give you 5 innings. Maybe he goes 6 once.
But that's kind of, in today's game, that's kind of the norm for a fourth, fifth, maybe even a third starter. right? I mean, you're not getting a lot of length from the.
I think less than six innings is not that surprising. I think just barely more than five is a little different.
Okay.
Like he had a lot of starts where he was going four innings.
Well, look, maybe it's more important in a roto league or a league that doesn't count quality starts or something like that, but there's a lot to be excited about with Brad Peacock. I'm pretty pumped about him. And he went for a decent amount in our auction, so I think I can look it up. I remember, do you remember?
He
I think
was nominated
$4,
early,
$5.
You know, he probably could have gone for a dollar if we were at that, if he was nominated at that stage.
Right.
I think my values have him at $4, but, you know, it depends so much on when a player gets nominated and how the rest of the auction plays out in terms of how aggressively we bid for higher end players, how much money's left at that point.
Yeah, he went for $5. We'll talk more about the auction in just a minute. I want to give a note. Like I said, we're going to have a podcast league entries. Hopefully tomorrow I'll make an announcement about it. And we're going to do the drafts. At least, Heath, I won't speak for you in the for the People League, but the regular podcast points league will certainly be after the two games in Japan. Right, Heath, for the People League?
I would say yes.
Yeah. So we'll tell you how to get in, hopefully tomorrow, and you'll have some time to get in, so you don't have to rush. But we're getting a ton of emails now, and it's awesome. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. I just want to let you know I can't read all of them on the show. I can't respond to all of them. So, you know, I know some people respond like three times to the email. Hey, how come you're not reading my email? I just have a full inbox, and I can't get to everything. I can, however, get to this next one. Because it requires some regulating. All right, one fantasy regulators, and then we'll get our final auction takeaways and tell you what else you need to know from spring training. This one is from the Big Dog. I think this is a very mean fantasy regulators. Big Dog, I think you're crazy. But I would like to know what Heath and Scott have to say. Okay, Big Dog is the commish of his league. That means I'm the real fantasy regulator in my league, but I wanted to settle this issue once and for all. I wanted to raise my league buy-in to $100, but the rest of my league won't comply because they are either all broke or scared. I think this should give me probable cause to kick these people out from the league and replace them with people who make more money. Big Dog out.
It depends.
This is cruel.
Because the way you phrased this is like nobody else wants to do this. If that's the case, then maybe they should kick you out of the league.
Yeah, I think so, Big Dog.
But if it was a situation where you had 11 owners that wanted to play for $100 and one guy who didn't, then I would agree with Big Dog.
Scott, who's getting kicked out of the league?
You're putting in the legwork, right? You're setting up the league. You're recruiting everybody. Like, it's kind of your league, right? I think the nicer thing to do would to start a secondary league that plays for $100, which I mean that's a lot for me. So
yeah,
I wouldn't want
to be in your league.
Doesn't want to play it.
Yeah, it's $100.
Yeah, that would be the nicer thing to do. But if you don't want to have two leagues, I mean, if you think you can fill a league full of one guys who want to play for $100, that's I think it's fine. I think you're letting these other people down, but unless one of them is willing, one of them could step up and become the commissioner of a separate league if they want.
Yeah, I think the Big Dog is kind of a mean commish. I don't really approve of your tactics, but I also say, Scott, if $100 is too much for you for a fantasy baseball league, you probably should not go to Vegas. All right. So how'd that auction turn out? I hope you all enjoyed the podcast on Friday, and it took over 4 hours to complete. That's why we didn't do the whole thing on the air. I don't know how, somehow I'm projected to be like last in like every hitting category almost, except for batting average.
Your team's really bad.
It does look pretty terrible. It does. But you know what? Like, because right now I have Kyle Tucker and Gregory Polanco in my lineup, and obviously I have to replace them.
I think
so that
you may only have two outfielders that are going to be playing on opening day.
And that's a good point. Cause like, I know I've said, like, I don't think outfield is, like, super deep. I don't think you can just forget about it, or else you end up with my crappy outfield, which does include Mike Trout.
What I don't understand is you had a chance in the reserve draft, and you got one, you got Cole Calhoun, but you had a chance in the reserve draft to take several outfielders who have full-time roles right now. I know Nick Markakis was one you passed.
I was going to take him. He got taken.
Yeah.
Yes. No, so I have an outfield problem, but I really think that I'll be able to, like, plug and play at outfield. I'll be able to get by. So that
and
was
you have like four backup closers.
I have two backup closers. So I have Brazier and I have Greg Holland.
Because and Kelvin Herrera.
Well,
and yeah. Andrew Miller.
Oh, and you're right. Miller. You're right. Okay, so that was my philosophy. My philosophy was like, we drafted fairly early. It was the eighth. And I drafted Jordan Hicks. So I took Andrew Miller because I didn't want to draft Jordan Hicks and have him not get the closer's role, and then I don't have the Cardinals closer. I'm going to drop these guys before the season starts. Like, we have plenty of time. This is not my opening day roster. I covered my bases, but I won't talk. I have a couple of takeaways from the draft that I think can help people. One, pay attention. I didn't pay close enough attention at times, and that's how I ended up with Kelvin Herrera because I accidentally nominated him. But he honestly might be the closer. Like, that might end up being okay. He was great last year, for what it's worth.
He could be the closer at some point. I don't think he's going to be ready for opening day.
Yeah, it's a shame. But hopefully he goes on the DL. I just put him right on the DL. And then Colum A's terrible the first time out, and everybody thinks,
DL might be full.
Okay, my team sucks. But, Heath, what were some of your takeaways from the auction? Not just auction takeaways necessarily. Well, whatever it is. You go nuts.
I mean, I think the biggest thing, and this is probably too simplistic, but you really have to pay attention to how your auction is going, more so than with a draft. And it's true with the draft, too. Certain positions go really early. You've got to adjust. This auction, to me, and Scott, you can say if you agree or not, felt different than just about any auction we've done with this similar group of people in the past. There was not a period like there usually is of just enormous overpays for 20 or 30 players and then all of a sudden great values. It seemed like it got, Adam, you referenced this, it got really weird with some people nominating $1 and $2 players and them going for $5 and $7.
Right.
But there wasn't a lot of overpay for the $30 or $40 players. They mostly went right about where I had them. And so I didn't end up going with the strategy that I generally plan on, which is studs or stars and scrubs. I ended up with a pretty balanced roster instead.
Okay. And that, like we said, every auction just has its own personality. And that's, it's, you know, you can prep all you want. I think you have to know, Heath kind of said, I go in there with a plan, with a player A I want. If I don't get him, here's my player B. And if I don't get him, here's my player C. That's not a bad approach. You have to have backup plans because things will go kind of haywire.
I think that's where it helps to have a set of auction values you're working off of. Not that you have to be, like, you shouldn't be really strict about following the auction values, but it gives you a sense of, like, you want to know if those early players are going for too high or too low so that you're aware there's going to be money left or there's not going to be much money left later and there's going to be a lot of bargains. By my auction values, the high-end guys still went for more than I had them. So from my the perspective of my auction value, some of those late guys did go for less than I had them for. I thought the bargains were decent. It wasn't as extreme as past years. But, I mean, one of my takeaways was just the closer role, where you had the top guy, Edwin Diaz. I think he went for 18, which was too little, I think, by all of our, by what we set our auctions, we all set our auction values for him to be. But it seemed like every closer with a guaranteed role went in the $13 to $18 range. There wasn't a lot of variance there. But then the guys who were available late, and there were, you know, maybe they're not as assured of being the full-time saves guy, but I mean, guys like David Robertson, Matt Barnes, I think Archie Bradley with the great Greg Holland spring is gone, not throwing very hard, getting crushed. I think they're all pretty safely the number one save sources for their respective teams. And I got them for a combined $6. So I still feel like, you know, closers not in an auction environment, the difference in value can be so great that it's still not something you want to pay up for unless you're getting great, great ratios like from an Edwin Diaz. And he's not going for 20 plus, you know?
Yeah. Diaz went for 18. We were surprised that Craig Kimbrel went for 19. He ended up being the most expensive closer. It was weird. But that does happen sometimes. But yeah, the closers, you're right. That's a good point about closers. One of my takeaways, it's just, we know it to be true, but when you play in, like I said, this was like this league in terms of league depth is like a 6 out of 10, 60 out of 100. It's a little bit on the deeper side, but it's not AL only, NL only. There is waiver wire, good players on the waiver wire, but third base is just so deep. And if you're going to wait somewhere or, you know, not spend big somewhere, if you really want to save your money, it's not a bad idea to wait at third base. There's just so many good players. I got Justin Turner for $10. I also have Gurriel for $1, and he's third base and first base eligible, which was my other takeaway. Multi-position eligibility, I think, is very helpful. And it comes into play where I took Alex Bregman for $37, and that allowed me at the end of the auction, I hadn't filled third base, and I think I ended up using Bregman at short, but yeah, I did. But I was looking at both the third baseman and the shortstops to see what was left. And if shortstop happened to have somebody better who was left, I would have moved Bregman to third base, and now I can bid on a shortstop instead of bidding on a third baseman. It just helps. So players with multi-position eligibility, I think it gets a little overlooked sometimes, and that's another takeaway that I had. I have one more, but Heath, let me get you.
Yeah, my takeaway was how different this auction was. I don't know that I necessarily have another one.
Oh, okay. Scott, how about you? Do you have another one? No?
Well, pitchers, the elite tier of pitchers went for a lot in this one.
Uh-huh.
I think we all recognize how irreplaceable that is in a modern environment. Those pitchers aren't just emerging from the middle of the pack with the consistency they used to in the past. You may get one, maybe two true ace breakouts at starting pitcher these days, and at a position with that many options, obviously you're talking about threading a needle in terms of landing those guys. So we all wanted to ensure we got one. I think most of us were probably hoping for two of them, and they very consistently went for more than I had them for. I think it's a reflection of what we're seeing in fantasy baseball as a whole. People really valuing those guys more than ever before.
And that brings me to my final point. Now, you missed this. This wasn't on the air, but there was a moment that really screwed up my entire draft. I was editing the podcast while doing the auction, and I missed the one player that I really wanted to get. Because if you heard the show on Friday, you know I missed out on all the aces. I did not get an ace. Instead, I had Steven Strasburg for $24, where all the aces were going in the $30 range or so. I think Gerrit Cole ended up going for like $33, something like that. DeGrom and Scherzer were $36. So I had Strasburg for $24, and there was one other player that I was determined to get, and it was James Paxton, and I could have gotten him for $21, and I missed the nomination. He went for $20, and it threw off my entire strategy. I ended up instead getting Jameson Taillon for $19, and I would much rather have Paxton for two more dollars if I miss out on all those aces. So my goal was, if I didn't get one of those top 13 or so aces, to get both Strasburg and Paxton. I believe that when they are healthy, or if they stay healthy, I believe Strasburg and Paxton, their upside is Cy Young. I think they could have that kind of season. I don't think there's a chance that Jameson Taillon has that good of a season. So I guess it's not just for auctions, but that's my takeaway is if I miss out on those aces, I might get two of those very talented, very high upside guys who have some risk. Strasburg and Paxton would be two great examples of that, and hope that kind of makes up for not getting an ace. Luckily, I got Yu Darvish for $14, and he's an ace. He just got hurt last year. I'm very confident in Yu Darvish. But yeah, my team sucks because I don't have Paxton. Is basically what I was trying to say. Go ahead.
Does Paxton play the outfield?
You know,
actually, outfield. I'm looking at your team now, Adam. You got some nice buys. I think Brian Dozier for $2 is probably one of the standouts of the entire auction. Jose Abreu, for 15. Dozier, he was actually like playing through injury for all of last year. He says that's something that he feels like an MLB player is supposed to do. So he was quietly playing through a very bad bone bruise in his knee, which might help explain why his year was so bad. So getting him for $2 was nice. Justin Turner for $10, I think, was good value. It's just that outfield is going to take some work for sure.
Yeah,
but you got something to work with here. And even your pitching staff, Strasburg, Taillon, Darvish, Glasnow are your top four.
Oh, no.
There's a lot of upside.
Skaggs is my ace.
It's going to take a lot going right. Oh, Skaggs is your ace?
Yeah.
I mean, there's upside even there for him.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of high probability picks there, but you can could definitely see it going right for you.
Oh, if only I had Paxton. You know, I was looking at the projections because I didn't love my team. And I looked at the projection. I said, oh, I'm projected to like be close to the league lead in strikeouts. But those were hitter strikeouts. Certainly not pitcher strikeouts. Also, I just want to tell everybody the text message I sent to Scott, Heath, and Chris yesterday, telling them what we needed for today's show. Number one, a few succinct takeaways from the auction. So Heath, few succinct takeaways from the auction. I'm just, you know, it was pretty clear. It was in writing there.
Right. I had a takeaway from the auction. Scott had one. You had one. That's a few.
Okay. Thank you. I did want to go over some of the interesting players that were drafted in this auction. Most of them were like a dollar or they were reserve round picks. I'm going to say a name and I want a quick reaction about these guys. All right. A $1 Kyle Schwarber. Heath, go.
There's definitely upside there, but I get a little bit concerned. He just doesn't look like he can hit lefties, and I'm not sure he should play against him.
What if you had a lead? What if you were in a daily league? Like, is Kyle Schwarber a sneaky play? Because he is great against righties.
Much better in daily leagues, yes.
Yeah, okay. Scott, a $7 Ryan Braun.
That was one of the worst buys of the draft. I know he's made some changes to his swing, hoping to elevate the ball better this year, and maybe it'll lead to better power production than kind of the downward trend he's been on. But he's kind of old to be making that change, and not only that, but he's kind of the Clayton Kershaw of hitters in that we know there are going to be built-in periods of rest. It's hard to rely on him in a weekly league.
I won't even get a huge reaction on this one. I think it was Heath. Paul DeJong for a dollar.
I loved it.
He got so overlooked.
There was a huge reaction, a fist pump from me when I got him.
Yeah, that was a good one. Paul DeJong for a dollar. Some infielders. I thought Scott got a great value on Ryan McMahon. He was one of your last picks. He was in the reserve rounds. Ryan McMahon.
He was my last reserve round pick, yeah.
Yeah, it was great. He could be the starting second baseman. What is the probability that Hampson and McMahon share playing time?
90%.
90%. That's
a lot.
Okay. I mean, I think Hampson has a spot for sure. Whether it's everyday second baseman, whether it's super utility guy, I think he's in. It's just a question of is McMahon in as the primary second baseman or not. The way the Rockies have handled them this spring suggests to me that that's the way they're leaning. McMahon as their primary second baseman, Hampson playing some second base, some shortstop, some center field, getting close to everyday at bats that way. So I'm more enthusiastic about McMahon than I was before the start of spring training when I just thought the job was going to go to Hampson.
How about these infielders? Catcher eligible, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Pittsburgh third baseman Jung-Ho Kang, Padres second baseman Luis Urias.
All exciting.
Yeah.
Definitely, like, I like them more, and I think in a deeper league than this, like when you go to 15 team leagues, certainly league specific format, they're kind of that depth of sleeper for me and don't often make the cut in a standard mixed league, but you definitely see the upside there for all of them. Jung-Ho Kang sounds like he could win the third base job outright. And you look at his numbers from his first 2 years in the majors, pretty good power hitter. Urias, I'm not sure, has the power, but he seems like a very safe profile, a guy who's going to hit for a good batting average, get on base a decent amount. Kiner-Falefa is just interesting because he plays so much for a catcher-eligible player. He's kind of the Rangers super utility guy, some of that coming at catcher. I don't think the numbers are going to be that exciting, but just the volume could put him higher in the rankings than you expect.
Would you rather have Isaiah Kiner-Falefa or kind of steady Eddie Wellington Castillo?
Castillo.
Yep.
Okay, how about these outfielders? Harrison Bader, Tyler O'Neill, Ramon Laureano, Leonis Martin, Cedric Mullins, Austin Meadows, and Detroit outfielder Kristen Stewart. It's a couple Cardinals, Harrison Bader, Tyler O'Neill, Ramon Laureano, Leonis Martin, Cedric Mullins, Austin Meadows, Kristen Stewart, all pretty cheap. Heath, who interests you in that group?
Well, O'Neill is the one that I drafted, so I guess I should say him. I think he actually went in the reserve rounds, and I just don't know why. Like, Dexter Fowler started off the spring 2-for-16. He was worth negative 2 WAR last year. Jose Martinez or Tyler O'Neill should be starting in right field. O'Neill's been crushing the ball so far this year.
And he's got power. He, you know, bad plate discipline, but
Yep. When I go the bargain basement route in that, in a five outfielder league, which I did in both my 15 teams, leagues this year, Tout Wars and TGFBI, O'Neill's one of the guys I love drafting for my bench. I love drafting him. I love drafting Clint Frazier. Got a couple shares of Lewis Brinson. Just those upsidey outfielders who you could see taking a big leap forward this year, even if they're not guaranteed playing time from the start.
But what about Harrison Bader or Laureano, Leonis Martins?
Well, those are two.
Yeah.
Bader and Laureano are the two from this list that I drafted in this league. And what I like about both of them is they seem to have both power and speed. I'm not sure that they have enough to be 20-20. But in a five outfielder league, in a league where stolen bases are in high demand, even like a 15-15 guy is pretty valuable. And there's a chance they could sneak up with 20 of either one or the other. So they're interesting to me in, as a way of kind of rounding out a roto roster. Another guy I like a lot from this list you gave is Kristen Stewart, who I don't think has many concerns about his playing time on a Tigers team with nothing going for it. And he was impressive down the stretch last year. Really good plate discipline, a lot of power. I think it's kind of a Carlos Santana-like profile, which might be a little more exciting in a points league because of all the walks. But, I mean, there's a chance he hits more like 260 than 230. So I think Stewart is somebody who's high on my, I guess, kind of my deep sleepers list.
Heath, how about these major league starting pitchers? I'll get Scott's thoughts on the minor league starting pitchers who were drafted, but these major leaguers who were taken late. Miami starting pitchers Trevor Richards and Sandy Alcantara. Minnesota starting pitchers Michael Pineda and Kyle Gibson. And Giants starting pitcher Jeff Samardzija. Who do you like?
I think Gibson's probably going to be the best of these five starting pitchers, but he's also may be the least exciting to me. I'm looking forward to seeing what Pineda can do, and I really think the Marlins, at the very least, have three pitchers that you should be okay with starting when they're at home. So it's not a bad guy to have as a on your bench to start the season.
Okay. Yeah, it's so weird. Gibson has never had a whip below 1.29, and yet he's had two good ERA seasons. Strikeouts, I think, were up last year. Scott, minor league starting pitchers. Chris Paddock. Jeez, those numbers. Jesus Luzardo for Oakland. Justice Sheffield for Seattle, Forrest Whitley for Houston. Paddock, Luzardo, Sheffield, and Whitley all got drafted.
Yeah, I think that's deserved in a league of this depth. I'm kind of newly coming around to Chris Paddock here, who I wasn't giving much of a chance at all of being on the Padres opening day roster. He has so little experience, but they're really talking him up there. He had 7 strikeouts, I think, in 4 innings in his most recent start. He says he's trying to be the opening day starter, which might be a stretch, but if he's on the roster, you know, he's not going to last all season because that innings buildup is so limited, but he could maybe get to 130 or so of innings with a great strikeout to walk ratio. Luzardo's kind of in the same boat, I think, in terms of how much innings he can provide and potentially, I mean, they're all kind of in the same boat. They're going to be limited with the innings. I think Paddock and Luzardo have the best chance of cracking the opening day roster. But Whitley, I expect to contribute as a starter at some point this year. Sheffield,
I don't think
I'm
he should have
sure
been drafted.
He profiles as a starter in the long run.
Yeah, he's starting out
but
in the bullpen.
He's a highly regarded pitching prospect. He's control issues, has a kind of a limited arsenal. Like it really screams relief to me, Sheffield's profile. But he's a starter for now, and maybe he'll surprise me.
I do think Luzardo. He threw 110 innings, 109 innings last year. So I think he's got a reasonable shot of being able to throw 150, 160. They came out, I think it was yesterday or the day before, said he's not going to be making the trip to Japan with the team, but is still in the mix to be in the rotation on opening day.
And we got to finish the show now, but I just want to say, like, Chris Paddock, his career in the minors, he has a 182 ERA, a .8 whip, 20 walks to 230 strikeouts in 177 and two-thirds. That's like, it's unbelievable. Holy cow. And that's it for Fantasy Baseball Today here on Monday. I'm sorry that we didn't get to your emails. I promise I'll make time for emails on Tuesday. So send us your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. For Scott White and Heath Cummings and Chris Towers, who made a big mistake by not drafting Greg Bird, I'm Adam Azer. We'll talk to you tomorrow.